Teacher Eljoy Williams, and you can see us. Hi! If you actually are listening to this episode on the feed, if you go to our website at sundaycivics.org, you can watch all of the video of this conversation right now, actually. So you can just go sundaycivics.org. It's on splash page in the front of the website. And today we're just going to talk about everything going on in the world. We don't have a guest interview. The guest interview is us.
Yes.
And as usual, I don't do the show by myself often. I try not to.
But you could.
But I have with me my civic accomplice, June, like the month. Moses.
Like the Bible. I'm going to part the waters. I'm going to lead you to freedom.
So, also with us, our social justice attorney, Laurie Daniel Favors.
Hey, y'all. How you doing?
And so for this episode, we are going to talk about all of the stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. We'll give you some action steps and things that you could possibly take on a number of these issues. And then we're going to talk about each other.
Oh.
Yeah. We're going to talk about each other. Talk about some of our first civic actions.
Oh.
Talk about some of the work that we've done throughout our careers, which brings us to the point to even bring you civic education or have this conversation in the first place. We do get questions.
Yes.
People asking us how to get involved or what was your first level of involvement? What made you decide that you wanted to be in this kind of work? And so I figured, you know, it's the holiday season. People, you know, may not necessarily want to hear everything heavy all the time. So, you know, let's talk amongst ourselves. Let's talk amongst ourselves. I'll give you a topic. First topic.
Yes.
Everything is going to hell in a hand. No.
No, that is a
flammable
great topic.
I'm draws very there. In a handbasket.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm there. Is.
Yeah.
I'm there.
But okay, so first topic is net neutrality.
Uh-huh.
So you saw December 14th, I believe it is, the FCC will be voting on this topic. And by now, people probably have seen all of the descriptions of what net neutrality is. And the basic of it is that everybody has equal access to the internet, right? And that there is no gatekeeper that is charging you more to access certain websites or certain businesses over the other. So that means me producing Sunday Civics, right? That you have an equal opportunity to access it. It doesn't load slower because Netflix gives Optimum or Spectrum more money. And therefore your Netflix loads quicker than Sunday Civics.
Right.
So it creates an equal playing field.
Yay.
And we, they're trying to roll back certain aspects of net neutrality that were passed under the Obama administration. And wanted to get you guys' thoughts on this renewed fight. And then I have a particular question that we kind of always miss in these fights.
I'm afraid of this. I'm very concerned about this. If you have somebody, pick up your phone, call and tell them, no, keep the net neutral. And I'll tell you why. I work very, very hard to be able to have the best internet, be able to get on whenever I want. You want to know what? It doesn't work well. No matter how much money I've paid these people, and you know who you are. If it rain, I can't get online. You know, if baby Jesus cry, I can't get online. So if there's net neutrality and my money that I'm paying now isn't enough, and my service already is trash, and I live in the ghetto, I think that means that I'll never know what's going on. I'm going to be completely locked outside. And I run up and down my block trying to explain this to people who give me the blank look until I go, you like Facebook? Okay, you like dragging people on Facebook? Well, guess what? You won't be able to drag people on Facebook in real time because you can't afford it. Then everybody gets upset.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want to be able to gossip or whatever it is they do on Facebook. I'm not going to assume, but I'm concerned. Get concerned. Make a call.
That's your, all
I'm
your drag say. Will be slow.
You will be slow dragging. You're already dragging. But there will be no loading like, quickly
we,
for
we,
you.
We off that already.
Like, that was 3 weeks.
Well, which also happens on Facebook anyway, because we'll be talking about something on Twitter, and then it'll appear on Facebook 2 weeks later, and we're like,
really?
The good jokes are already gone.
We've used this all. This has already been memed.
Like we're done with this.
But you know what? And the things that you were saying was reminding me of, June. I remember during Ferguson uprising, during Baltimore uprising, particularly Ferguson though. And when I was on Twitter and I was seeing what was happening on Twitter, because it was not on the news yet, right? There was no publicity there. It was everything was Twitter based or social media based. And when people started getting tear gassed, I remember when Palestinian brothers and sisters would tweet back and say, oh, this you need milk you for tear gas. This is what you do to get the burning sting. And they were communicating in real time about how to deal with the physical effects of the oppression that was coming down at the hands of what was going on in Ferguson. And if we are under a net neutrality, rule-less regime, if these rules are not, if what was what rules were put into place under President Obama's administration are not preserved and expanded and really even made even
right.
that
and
much
that's
more.
A good point. It's like we still, it's not
we're
like
at a bare minimum.
Right.
Well, we weren't in the glory of like internet connectivity. But if we even lose the basis of the laws that we, the protections that are already provided, then we're really at a space where people who are using the web now to do civil engagement, to do social justice work, to Black Lives Matter being a hashtag is one of the calling cards of that institution, that organization. If we are relying on internet speeds and internet neutrality to be able to deliver messages where if you're not in favor of Black Lives Matter and you happen to be the CEO of this particular ISP, you can cut off that communication. So there will be no real-time trading of information and resources from international spaces. There will be no collaboration, and it really does put a limit on our ability to even exchange and even to be able to engage in this type of media. And when I think about Black women being like, X hundred amount of times more likely to start businesses, to grow entrepreneurship spaces, and a lot of us are relying on internet capacity to do that. And so if net neutrality rules are not preserved and then expanded, we're gonna have to come up with something, because we're in a world of hurt.
Yeah. I think the expanded conversation is also getting missed in this, in that we just want to save and preserve what we have.
Right.
And I think that's across the board on everything that we're fighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything that we're fighting, you know, we have to put it into this context that we have to have this or nothing at all. Not to mention that there are a number of other things that, you know, at bare minimum, we were trying to expand it, trying to, you know, take it to a different level in order for it to be more effective for the people that it's supposed to serve.
Yeah.
And net neutrality is one of those examples, right? So the thing also that's being missed in all of our fights is that we spend so much time fighting the policy and the institution and the laws that are being rolled back or regulations being rolled back, that you know who we aren't holding accountable? The companies themselves.
Right.
That's because they got the bag. They've secured the bag and they plan on never giving back any parts of the bag.
Right.
They need more bags.
And if you have an administration who is stuck on, you know, we don't want any kind of regulations. We want, you know, the businesses to sort of take care of themselves. It leaves us at a disadvantage to actually do that, right? So you can say, okay, we're going to roll back, you know, the neutrality rules, but then that then means that we have to come together collectively and press an AT&T or a Spectrum or whatever and say, don't siphon, you know, charge more for this. And that, you know, even people individually coming together to do that is difficult.
Yeah.
Right? Because AT&T could be like, sucks to be you, pay me that $18.99 extra, you know, in order to
do
this.
Right.
And so the reason why these regulations or these policies exist, and the reason why you want your state government or your city government or even the federal government to do these things is because they have a bigger voice. They can say, right, if you put a regulation that says, no, you can't throttle based upon this because it is unfair across the board, particularly if you have certain states who still are waiting for the fiber optic cables and, you know, and to have better service in some of those communities.
They're still in dialogue.
So that's the reason. So the regulations and the policy, people like to think of them as bad.
Yeah.
But the reason why is because even if individuals come together collectively, our voices sometimes are still not as powerful as a government saying to a multinational corporation, right? Because remember that we're also making lax rules so that it's more easy for these companies to become conglomerates and sort of not only have the newspaper, but then the local news station and then control the internet, right? So you have all of that together. Right. That puts us as the people at a disadvantage.
Right.
Yes. And so that is the reason why you want a federal government to do regulations such as this to protect the consumers.
Right.
Which brings us to our next topic on the Consumer Financial Bureau.
Protection
Bureau. Oh, Lord.
Protection Bureau.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Right? So so that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we were already in a space where there were advocates and others talking about how do you expand the powers? What else can this agency do to protect consumers?
Right.
But now we're put back at a disadvantage as we have to protect what's there first before we can even talk about expansion.
Right.
And if you have an administration who's not even, you know, and it's difficult because right now we're in a time where you can't, the bipartisan thing doesn't exist.
No. Oh, that was dead.
No.
Right? You can't even come to the table and say, let's have a conversation about like how we can work together and come to some, not only compromise, but just things that make sense.
Right.
Right? Let's just come together and talk about things that make sense. You can't do that.
No, not
right?
All
and it's just like, you know, it's just all or nothing and on both sides.
Right.
It's like, either you take this or no.
Yes.
As opposed to, let's come together and see how we can make something better, something different, how we can enhance. No. It's like, nope, I got my toys on this side in my toy box, and you got your toys. Your toys ain't better than mine, and that's the only thing we working with.
See, you know, I feel like, I think, yes, both sides do this, but I feel like one side has embraced a philosophy that we will not compromise unless the compromise is you agreeing to what we want. Where, and I'm going to say, can I say every partisan? Okay. So the Republicans have a policy that says, we don't care what the middleman says, and we don't care what the best good for all would be. This is our stance. This is our position, and we want you to come to us. Democrats have a, well, we're going to make a big tent, and we're going to approach everything, and we're going to try to, and Democrats are operating according to a rule book that Republicans are not operating according to, and there's no ability. Yeah, and there's just no ability for them to ever be able to meet anywhere that's going to make common sense, let alone just basic sense. And I feel like when thinking about regulations, that word is always interesting because sometimes we use big words, and I'm not saying us here on this podcast, we use wonderful words. But like in government work, we often use these terms that don't necessarily connect with what people are really living. Like regulations are just things that companies have to do in order to make us safer in some way that they don't want to do that might cost them more money to do, but it's going to keep us safe. So like a seatbelt in a car. There was a time that cars did not have seatbelts.
We grew up in that time.
You didn't have to have a car seat and your infant could be in the front seat.
I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about when we were younger and whether or not, or being in the station wagon and just being laid in the back.
Like, yes.
Listen.
Or riding the flatbed.
Where that big
truck,
back just space, and that was seats. As many people as you could get back.
You wanted to squeeze in and sit between like your granddaddy
you
and then like up in the front.
That's what you did. Who needed a seatbelt?
Nobody.
So
that was
when,
a suggestion.
When there was like a study that said, hey, if we put these belts to keep people from flying through windows, they might not die in a car accident.
Right,
that was a regulation. And that was a rule. And car companies didn't want to do it because it was going to cost them more money to implement this seatbelt. But that regulation keeps people safe. Now, I don't get in the car, don't move. You got your seatbelt?
Yeah.
Or it beeps.
Right.
You know, it like beeps and tells you, like, put your seatbelt on or something like that.
Like, regulations keep us safe. Regulations say you can't build a bridge with styrofoam and drive a semi-truck over it because that would be bad. So we need real cement. Like, we need actual rules. And that's really all it is. And sometimes when you talk about deregulation, what they're really saying is we don't want to put seatbelts in the car anymore because it's not allowing us to get as much profit.
Yeah. So, and that's the difference between when we had our previous economy episode, when Dr. Malveaux was talking about the difference between predatory capitalism, right?
Amazing.
So capitalism is bad generally, right? It's not in favor of people. It's in favor of profits.
Corporations.
Right?
Which are
profits,
people, my friend.
Right, oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry. And then predatory capitalism is the extra. It's just like, I really don't care about your life. I really care about, you know, my coin.
Right.
And so, but I feel as if what is still missing in this conversation is we're fighting a lot on making sure that to preserve regulations.
Yeah.
And there's a difference because as a small business owner, there are some regulations where I'm like, really?
Right.
I can't.
You can't breathe.
Like, it has to be in purple ink.
Yes. Right. Like,
yes.
Why do I have to fax this way? Right. But anyway.
Because I have to fax it? I can't scan it and feed it. Right.
And to remember
why
penalty.
Can't I just email penalty. It to you? Right. So there are penalty. All of those kinds of things. And don't get me started on the people who owe millions of taxes and my little $6,000. They be calling me every damn day.
We ducking out.
Listen, there are people out there that never pay taxes. They're hair president. And because you don't pay any taxes, there are certain things that just can't be done. But, you know.
But you see the news story of people, they be like, he owed $4.5 million in taxes. I'm like, who's coming to his motherfucking house?
Like,
there goes the tea lady. There it is.
No
and
more
y'all thought
child
it was going to be me. Everybody thought it was going to be me, Miss Lowbrow, and here it is.
I got to admit, that's my favorite cuss word. to that point, but missing in the conversation is holding the corporations and the companies accountable to do more.
Right.
Because we spend so much time and we have to.
Yeah.
Right? We have to spend so much time on preservation of a regulation or preservation of a policy or enacting this new law. Mind you, it's like, why do we have to do that? Like, you know, you really just want to go to AT&T, Spectrum and all that stuff. It's like, you, no.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right.
All right? We good? All right. Just go on. But you can't. You need that regulation. You need that bully pulpit of the federal government to hold them accountable. Otherwise, they're like looking and it's just like, this is going to save me 12 cents, which results in millions of dollars at the end of the year.
Because that 12 cents times 300 million people. Right? And we know regulations are important because people are still trying to skirt them now.
Yes.
There are regulations in place that people pay millions upon billions of dollars to try to avoid and get around. And that's with the regulation in place. Once you remove that, the type of rule that can keep you safe, please, it's a free-for-all.
Yeah. Which is always bothers me when people are like, oh, this regulation is going to stop businesses from doing this. I was like, no, it's not. They're just going to find a new way to do it. Just like when we talk about criminal stuff and it's just like, and this will prevent people, you know, the death penalty will prevent people from killing people. I'm like, where?
Nope. Never happened.
Like, where in the history of humankind has the threat of you dying ever prevented somebody from killing somebody?
If I have to murder someone, it's still going down. You murdering something means nothing to me. I still will.
That's not what prevents me from murdering people.
Right. Yes.
Right. I don't tell my child, son, I want you to grow up and not murder people because if you did, you could get the death penalty. That's just not in the message. The message is, how about you value the sanctity of life?
Okay.
And how about you, like, you know, treat others the way... I don't use the death penalty to get... Because there are things that I can appeal to. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't... I still don't understand why we haven't evolved beyond the death penalty, but that's...
Because revenge!
That's all it is. Yeah. Punishment, our crime and punishment or our justice system is all about revenge.
It is.
Yes.
But it is not
revenge for white people because we don't get revenge.
Yes, exactly. No, we can't even win on Judge Judy. Are you kidding? That's all I'm trying to say. Pay attention.
Are you saying Judge Judy is racist too?
I'm just saying that there used to be a time where everybody was like, oh, Judge Judy doesn't have on any black defendants. And everybody bitched. And now we back. And now nobody win. So I'm just saying, sometimes before we start complaining, let's do a 360 about whether or not we going to win. And that also, think about federal judges and who these people are putting in place.
Oh my
they like
God.
Judge Judy times 10,000 and you won't win. Make your phone call, send your letters, but Eldred,
which brings us to the next thing on these federal judges, which again, there's so much going on, it's hard to pay attention to everything. I've literally stopped. I used to watch the news or have like CNN or MSNBC or something or NPR on all throughout the day while I'm working in the office or things like that.
Impressed you?
I now can't do that.
Yeah.
Because, because, you know, cable news doesn't know the difference between breaking news and just, like, regular news.
It's all
like
breaking.
They, like,
it's
Flynn
had
a guilty plea. The guilty plea that Flynn did was, like, earlier this morning. They still have it on breaking news. Negroes, we know already.
Yes.
It broke.
Take the breaking news down.
Yes.
The
news broke.
It's now just news.
Right.
Yes.
Unless news. You have additional details.
There are no
that
additional
ain't
details.
No additional details.
Only so speculation.
Now.
So it's just, you broke the news.
We got speculation for
it's
the next
broken.
8 hours, though. 8 hours of speculation.
Take down the symbol and the little jingle of the breaking
but
news.
But that's when you know it's real, when there's a jingle. That's what
you know there's somebody right now in the office, they're creating the graphics mm-hmm. package for mm-hmm. for the
yep.
in the news
yes.
for tonight.
And it's all going to have breaking news at mm-hmm. the bottom. But yeah, the judge situation is it's really scary.
Which reason that is that because remember, for a lot of these positions, they're lifetime
appointments. Meaning you were not elected, you were appointed by somebody in the White House.
And antifreeze tastes sweet.
And then not only appointing, you know, they're appointing people who are like in their 30s or 40s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? Which means that's after Trump is gone. That's after the next president.
Right. Because they're going to live another 40, 50 years at least.
Antifreeze tastes sweet.
Listen, I have a particular issue. I remember when I was in law school, we would have these debates about how the law is based on merit and how judges cannot, once you don the black robe, you are divining the law from the sources that are given to you. There's no room for racism there because you are an arbiter of the law.
And if you don't put me in your video, I'm gonna lock you up.
Okay, see, now you done messed up.
And it's
judges.
Not respecting the people of color neither.
No.
Really?
But there was like...
Put you in your damn
video.
Listen.
I have so many feelings about that case and that
Oh,
judge.
Do it, lawyer.
No, I can't.
Okay.
But I do want to make this point about the lifetime appointment.
Yay!
There is one particular judge, and his name is escaping me at the moment. I'm sure we can put it on a tweet, a tag, or whatever. The man has never filed a motion in court.
I saw that.
I don't know. And I remember when I came out of law school and I was working in corporate America and I was working at a corporate law firm, I did not know where the courthouse was because I was a brand new associate. And that's not what we did as brand new associates. We shuffled papers in the office. We didn't see clients. We were very low level attorneys. This man has never filed a motion in court.
That's scary.
And he now is being moved forward in the process to have a lifetime appointment, which means this person who knows zilch about the law for the rest of his life, and talk about job security, there is no job security like a federal judgeship appointment. He will have the ability to impact, interpret, and determine outcomes for people for generations.
I'm going to just throw this out there. I should be one because I've done more than him.
You
I've actually filed like papers for people since I've done that.
Listen.
I think that, hello, just call me.
And right. We'll talk about this in the new year, one of our new segments of who we elect. We're going to talk about judges.
Yeah, that's huge.
And, you know, I say in the new year because, you know, because if people are sitting judges, they have to get approval to be on the show and everything like that.
Yeah.
So we're going through that process.
Mm-hmm.
But people, you know, we elect some judges and some judges we appoint. And people are under the impression that all of the people that we appoint or elect as judges have familiarity with the law.
And they don't.
In some places, you don't have to be a lawyer to be a judge.
Right.
Like I say, hey.
Right? I mean, if you go back to the earlier, and I'm talking, now I'm getting into the episode, but if you go back earlier into, you know, our country, right? Sheriffs and judges.
Yep.
Like local sheriffs and local judges were this people we trust Bob, we trust, you know, Aaron.
June
we
makes
trust,
a lot of
you,
sense.
You know, like whatever.
She should be the judge.
She should be the judge.
Right.
And Larice should be, you know, the sheriff. Right. And that's just how, you know,
right.
it
No
it
legal
went.
Training, no
right.
necessarily demonstrating
We've evolved
ability.
Now to thinking about that, you know, in the future. And certainly electing judges now, there's ratings that different legal organizations do to rate judges, which, by the way, every like legal organization, this particular judge that Larie is talking about, every legal organization was like, no.
Like
every conservative
no.
one,
Hell
liberal
no.
one, middle of the road one was like, nah, dude. We ain't co-signing that. But they're still going through with it.
And so that means cases that are controversial, cases that involve civil rights, cases that involve... Because a judge has to interpret the law. And people often act like, oh, I look at the law, I look at the case, I apply the law to the case. What often happens, and I'm saying this as someone who has clerked and has had the privilege of working in a judge's chambers, and my judge was phenomenal. He was amazing. I love him to this day. He's fantastic. But what can often happen is I have an opinion... and I look at your facts through the gaze of my opinion, and then I find this slant of the legal interpretation that I want to apply, and that's how we come to the spaces that we're at. That's why slavery could be legal in one phase of judiciary, and if slavery is not legal, same kind of laws in many ways, but it's based on interpretation and where you come and where you approach these issues. So it is a scary time to be having someone in the White House who is opposed to civil rights, who is opposed to gender equity, who is opposed to so many things that we have fought for, appointing judges who are in agreement with him, who are now going to be able to have the ability to determine how those cases come out, because that sets precedent, and that precedent will last for the next set of decades, not just years, decades.
Antifreeze is sweet.
Well, the next thing that's been going on in our collective country's lives, this tax bill.
Oh God. Okay, you know what?
Back and forth.
I need everybody to understand something, because I skew slightly older than the group, right? Ronald Reagan was this man. Mm. He's GOP Jesus. Now, this man, he came up with this whole big tax plan, which all got passed, and they talked about this wonderful thing called trickle down. Mm. So all us poor folks, we gathered up our buckets, and we went running outside because the corporation was going to get the money, and it was going to be the trickle down.
Mm. He's going to catch it in your bucket.
In our buckets. Yes. And you know what happened? There might have been some government cheese and some peanut butter, but there was no trickle down. Mm. Now we're being sold that same bill of goods again by almost the exact same old people who were doing it the first time, except for GOP Jesus, who is now dead and shining upon them. And what I'm not understanding is why no one sees this for the jig it is. And if we're talking about contacting an actual corporation, let's talk to the ones who say we're going to give this extra money and to our stockholders. We're not going to hire more people and do all those. What? Right.
And particularly when they are saying, right, they're opposed, like, what are you going to do with this extra money? Yeah. Oh, we'll do this, this, whatever. And the higher extra people are expand is way down.
No.
Now, there's a difference because, you know, your local hardware store, which is the small business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also a larger, you know, company and with multiple stores, mm-hmm. which can also be considered a small business.
Yeah, it can.
Because the definition of a small business is like five million revenue.
Which, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know many small business owners. I don't know many.
They never get to, right. Yeah. So all of them are lumped together.
Yeah.
So from a federal government standpoint, it could, you know, there's a difference between a micro business, which might be your local candle shop or the bakery that you go, that you've been going for generations to get all your family members' mm-hmm. cakes, right? They're lumped together
yeah.
with other stores who may have multiple things, and it's based upon a dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, those making, you know, up to a $5 million annual revenue or something still may take that tax cut and right. say, well, yeah, now I can open the second store,
right.
which will result in hiring more people.
Yeah.
Now we can take on that state contract right. or something like that, and then I can hire a whole new cleaning crew or mm-hmm. something like that. That's different. And yes, that can happen.
Yeah.
But majority of the people that are going to benefit from these larger tax cuts are these multi, you know, national sort of right. larger organizations that are traded. Walmart doesn't need this.
No.
Target doesn't need
no.
this. Right? Applebee's doesn't need this. Like those kinds of, those larger entities, and mm-hmm. I think Applebee's is owned by somebody anyway, but those, you know, sort of larger entities, right? They're going to benefit their stockholders.
Yep.
They're going to, oh, we're going to put this money away for, quote, rainy day.
Right?
You know, we're going to do those kinds of things. Who needs to benefit is those small micro businesses.
Right.
But the thing is that they are using talking points that makes those small businesses feel like, yes, I need this, not recognizing that those are not the same people
right.
and those are not the same businesses that they're talking about.
So they're not talking about your little incense and shea butter making business when they're talking about tax breaks. They're talking about the people who can afford to go to the continent of Africa and buy up shea butter nut farms and then can distribute them internationally. These are small businesses that aren't small businesses.
That are traded on the stock market. You know,
right.
like all mm-hmm. of those kinds of,
right.
those come in.
Right.
And the deal that happens, or the trick that happens, mm-hmm. is that people use, and this is politicians on both sides, by the way,
mm.
On all sides, is they use those kind of talking points
yeah.
based upon your aspirations for yourself, your family, mm. and your business. right? So they'll say, you don't want these regulations or things like that. It's like, yeah, I made, you know, we only at $1 million revenue now, but when I get to 5 million, I don't want this kind of regulation or anything like that. And so you vote, and so you're doing your support based upon these aspirations.
Where you want to be.
Where you want to be.
Not where your wallet
is. Not where you are now.
And what the jig is that you and your little shea butter, for every dollar, you got to give 50 cents to the government if you're only an S Corp or whatever. And those other small businesses that are kind of big, they've got lawyers and all that stuff. Right. And they've created an LLC. And they done worked around it. And you know how much they pay in taxes? One whole dollar. Mm. So be real clear about what all this is. Listen to what Eljoy is telling you. Don't stop playing.
Yeah. And so that's the thing, is that it's thinking about where you are right now, right? And then thinking about, and then the other thing I really hate is, particularly when we're talking about economic policy, when they're talking about running the country like you run your house.
Oh my God.
Jesus. Because you can't run a country
all these like you run house.
Your household. Y'all right? House? You can't print your own money.
No, I can't.
You can't borrow from yourself. Mm-mm. You can't borrow from China. No. Like, you can't, like, if China, like, you can't
you
do
can't
any
even
of that.
Have Thanksgiving dinner at your house every day. And, like, because that's a massive undertaking. You can, the idea of running the government like you run your house, it's a foolish analogy. Yeah. But one that we often hear people, we see people falling for this.
Right. I mean, and then now, and then you have people, and to prove to you how unimportant, the we need to bring down our debt thing is, right? Mm. Is that they've abandoned that now for this tax bill. Ooh. Because everybody, every analysis of this tax bill, it says we're actually going to contribute to the debt. And now all of a sudden, Republicans and other folks was like, well, there's no way to do this without bringing it up. Just like, but just,
but we know there's a real reason for this. And it's a serious
It's a serious reason. A heart attack.
And we need to be clear.
And we just have to do it. Because trust us. Don't trust the other people that told you. And when we were doing the press conferences talking about how we need to bring down the debt and things like that. And yes, this that we're proposing will bring up the debt. But not as much.
So I think we have to be clear that there was so much resistance to anything that was going to add a penny to the debt under President Barack Obama.
You know why.
But now our president is white slash orange and so slash sepia. So now the commitment to social policy, to economic engineering, all the things that Republicans held so dear and the reason why they had to block every single attempt at legislative advancement that was being attempted under the past administration, it is now okay and out the window because our president is no longer black.
Yeah. And then, you know, the difficulty with economic policy is that oftentimes it's not felt until another administration.
It takes a little while. Takes a little while.
And so then you have other people. Yeah, ask David Dinkins.
That's all I'm going to say.
David Dinkins.
And so then you have other people taking responsibility for, you know, the growth, right? Because we see now Donald Trump taking responsibility.
Obama was failing, but now all of a sudden everything's great.
Yeah.
He ain't passed the policy yet, but he's going to take credit for all of these.
But he has played many rounds of golf. Do you know how many rounds of golf?
Maybe there's a direct correlation between the amount of golf you play and the economy doing great.
Maybe Tiger Woods isn't cheating anymore, and he might be on his way back, so maybe that could be it.
Gracious. Just say? Look at the time. It's, oh my. Wow.
All right.
Mm. Well, listen, he shouldn't have been out there playing around, and then he wouldn't have to get dragged.
Slowly.
That's all I'm just trying to say.
Or at net neutrality speed.
Listen, Elin, go ahead on and go and get that putter out again, sis, because it's needed.
All right. So, June.
Yes,
gracious,
ma'am.
Gracious. What, you know, you have worked in a social justice space for some time.
Yeah.
In and out.
It keeps calling me back in. It's like the mob. I try to leave. I try to go do other things. I want to clean houses, and it just pulls
you wanna
me
clean
back
houses?
In. Yeah, I could clean houses.
I've cleaned houses.
Listen to
I
me. So how about when I was in college, I didn't know that a type of job that exists to be somebody, like to be another family's au pair or whatever, take care of their kids so I could go, man.
You would have made a killing.
Let me tell you here. I would already have a doctorate.
Wait, yes. She said not here.
Here.
Okay. Nobody tell me this.
Yes. You too can help raise another generation of other people's children and do well.
Right, and put myself through school.
Yes. That's right. Yes.
I wouldn't have a debt I owe to Hofstra now. Mm-mm.
And they would still invite you to things because they would just be loving the fact that you were just so loving and caring to their children while
they kids
just
work on Wall Street. They'd be sending me a little happy Merry Christmas.
Here's the name of that time.
When you was two, when I was two, when you gave me a popsicle.
Kissed my boo-boo and gave me a Band-Aid.
Mm-hmm. When mommy and daddy was in Europe and could care less while I was on drugs.
Nobody told me that.
Nobody cared. You cared, or a pair.
This one, I can't keep it straight.
It's hard. All right. So what keeps calling you? What keeps bringing you back?
Yo, I can't stand to see my people lose. And a lot of our losing doesn't make sense to me. And the reason why it doesn't make sense is because... Sorry, I got to go with Papa Pope. We work twice as hard. Mm. We're twice as everything. Look at Obama. Look at what we have now. A person was failing in Walton and Wharton. So we work so hard. We work so diligently to have other people write our stories, to have other people describe us without us even being in the room. So then when you do enter the room, it's all like, oh, well, da-da-da-da-da. And my whole thing was, well, wait a minute. Let's try and make some sense of this here. And let me help you get a little bit closer to that finish line. Can I carry you on my back? See, that was a mistake. Let me tell you now, you can't carry them all. But you can teach. Mm. You can inspire. Yeah. Ask some of the people that came out of Elms Floor with me. They were inspired. And they're out there kicking ass and taking names to this day. And I am proud of every last one of y'all from Elms Floor. And every time I come by, I try to touch people and go, you can do it. You're great. There's nothing I do that's no... Because if we uplift that next one, then I don't have to worry about when I'm old being pushed down the stairs in my wheelchair because, you know, it happens. So if I do the right thing and make sure that these young people come up and look at the world now and look at the changes.
One of my girlfriends says, she's like, if I help somebody, that means somebody will come and visit me in the old folks' home.
Exactly. Because your kids ain't going to do it. You done ruined them. And they done went on Oprah and told how you done ruined their life and let them get touched or whatever problem there is. So... it's that mentor or pair, whichever. That's who they love, and they're going to check you out. So I try to help people. I'm not going to let you get railroaded. I'm not going to let certain things happen, not if I can help it. So, and I'm also very prickly about my blackness. Mm. And if I think that anything is coming at my blackness wrong, I'm very defensive about it. Be right or wrong. I will apologize if I'm a little bit wrong, but usually I'm dead ass right. And don't assault blackness. Because blackness is fabulousness. I had to grow there. So now that I'm there, oh, I'm like Xena with it. Oh,
I love it. All right, Lurie.
Yes, ma'am.
Yay. You have been fighting the good fight with college, high school, what?
Yeah, I think my first protest was in high school. They wouldn't let us wear the kente cloth stoles over our graduation robes. Uh-huh. So we held up graduation. And my mom was like, yeah. And my dad was like, all right now, sweetheart. And I was like, this feels really good. Something about resistance. And then when I went to college, I was an Africana studies major. So got a lot of exposure to like the science behind like the fuckery that is now the condition that we are in. And so, that's two F-bombs. I'm sorry. You're winning. Miss June, you are winning. So yeah, so... I was in Africana studies. I learned like the hows and the whys and what happened, and it all started to make a lot of sense to me. And then while I was at Penn State, while I was there, we dealt with like a 2-year hate campaign where the local hate groups, because in the state of Pennsylvania, you've got like Philly on this side, Pittsburgh on the other, and then 1920s Mississippi in between. And so
I mean, that's like upstate New York. Yeah,
exactly. Like yes. Upstate, like everywhere. Yeah. So we were, you know, we had emails that had been sent out to black athletes and to black people, black students and black activists, death threats, hate letters. There was that point where some people had to be like under guard and had to be escorted to and from. I mean, it was a real serious situation. And then at a certain point, throughout the course of that, we had been, you know, myself as a student and then as an alum and a number of other students, a ton of people had were coming together on a regular basis to really begin looking at the disparities between what was happening with black students at Pennsylvania State University and what was happening at other Big Ten colleges. So we began this whole sort of nationwide benchmarking campaign, and we're like, how come the Africana Studies Department don't have no money to make copies? Like, how come you don't have any black faculty? And what's going on when University of Michigan, Michigan State, all these other schools that you compare yourself to are doing all these things for their black students? So we got into the science of comparison and being able to make demands based on research and data. Ended up getting like multi-millions of dollars from the state legislators to create the first Africana Research Institute in the state of Pennsylvania. And then the Klan killed a black man. And they sent us a letter that said they had killed Imbran and searched this part of Mount Nittany, because, you know, Nittany Lions, we are Penn State. And so we ended up taking over. We were trying to let people know that there are people who have claimed to have killed someone. Like, this is like, there is like an admitted murderer on the loose who was motivated by racism, hate crime. The university wanted to shut it down. So we shut down a football game. We got arrested, and that sort of shifted the tide. We ended up taking over a building for a week and a half. They found the body, and it was a whole huge controversy, and we saw overt racism, and then we saw the covert racism as the university worked to hide it. We didn't know at the time the Sandusky stuff was happening. All the stuff we know now, the same people who are in jail right now for Sandusky stuff was the same people trying to hide and cover what was happening when we were there. So that really set me on a path that was like, oh, so this is how y'all play games, and this is what it means to be a Black person trying to navigate that. And that sort of shifted my whole focus, and I've been in that space ever since then.
What did you want to be?
I wanted to be a pediatrician who, I wanted to be a doctor. Ever since I was little, I wanted to be a doctor who helped babies. I wanted to deliver babies and help children. I didn't know that they were two different types of doctors, like the delivering and then the helping. So, you know, I didn't know. But I wanted to be a doctor who had an entity in the community that where people could come get their children's healthcare needs met. And then the moms and the dads, in my mind, it was moms because dads often weren't there. But the moms would come get the services. But then they would work in the clinic so that they would be getting the services that they needed, but helping to, like, train each other on, like, the workplace. And so I had, like, this whole vision. And then, like, high school math and science. Just kind of, I was like, oh, so math and science, like, I'm not prepared. I was not good at math and science at that time. I was in the era of girls don't do math and science. So that was kind of like a lot of the teachers I had. Right. Yeah, so, you know, Gen X, you know, it's only the millennials who get the benefit of, you know, docing stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, y'all get all of the crazy stuff.
Y'all don't even understand.
Y'all don't know. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that was what I wanted to do. And then I heard, when I was 17, I heard Alton Maddox speak.
Oh, yeah. He set a lot of us on our course.
There's a whole lot of us out here.
Oh, my God.
And wow. He's real controversial. I know people have their opinions, but yes. I will say he lit a fire. And I was
for
like,
a
all
lot
right,
of people, I was there
that's
too.
That's what I want to do.
Because, wow. Hey, yeah.
So,
how'd you get here, Joy? How did
so, you let me get tell you here? What I wanted to be. So, I wanted to be the first fashion designer / U.S. senator.
Oh.
That works.
So since I was like 5, 6, like whatever, like I would take, like I would get Barbies or I'd get dolls or whatever, but then I would take old clothes or fabric or whatever and make like new clothes for, you know, the dolls and things like that. Learned how to sew, you know, would, you know, make my own like, you know, clothes and things here and there. Would draw a lot. I still have my like very crude, very, very crude drawings and things like that.
You watched Pretty in Pink, didn't you?
You know, all of that. And so my dream, my deal was, is I was going to be a fashion designer and make all this money.
Yes.
And then I was going to sell my company and then run for U.S. Senate.
I love it.
That you was can like, and then
a doula, and we can still get these dresses and everything going. And so, she's never going to curse again because she will be running. Rodney already said she's running. So, we know she's running. She just don't know.
So that was my thing. And then I would always, like, I would play school, right? So I would make my siblings or my dolls, you know, sit, and I would do, like, you know, little teaching. I had this little cubby hole of a place, like, up landing where I grew up in Queens. You would go up the stairs, and there was this, like, little just box landing, and that's where all my toys were, and I would play until I got my own room. And it was always set up like a classroom. So I would have
so
a little...
Much sense.
Right, I would have a little, you know, board or whatever, and I would sit, you know, the dolls or, you know, different things around or whatever, and I would teach things, or, you know, I would do it to my younger cousins and things like that. And so it's funny, is like talking to some of my younger cousins now, and they talk about how, remember when Joy used to make us do, you know, thing or whatever.
What would you do to them if they didn't listen?
You know, most of the time I was the babysitter. I was the older cousin, right? So I'm the older, you know, cousin. So, you know, it was either listen to me or play something, but I was all, like, we had fun. Yeah. So it wasn't like a, you know,
it wasn't like,
a bad thing
Joy.
Or whatever, because I made it fun. So my sisters also talk about, my sister has 5 kids. And she always tells her kids, she's like, you know, Auntie Joy used to make us do activities. That's what I used to call them. So this is now high school. I'm in California.
So much sense.
I used to have to babysit my sisters, right? Because my mom was working and, you know, my stepfather, whatever, and I used to have to babysit my sisters. And, you know, to make it fun for me, in addition to, like, watching them, and my sister Tiffany was so mean. Oh, my gosh. She was just, like, mean for no damn reason. She, mean. So, so I would space. Right. Yes. I remind her about it every time. Is I would plan activities. You know, like, thing or whatever. So I would make them make, you know, things if it was a holiday or teach them how to make French fries from scratch and, you know, like, all of these kinds of things and, you know, make little projects and things like that.
I'm sorry. French fries from scratch?
Yes. Yes. I would, you know, like, all this stuff. To the point
so
that... So
I was like home ec class.
Right.
There you go.
Okay. So, like, I would do, you know, all this other stuff. And my sisters to this day, like, I'll send pictures and stuff I made. Like, I was showing the table setting that I had for Thanksgiving. And it was, like, joining her activities. I was like, you know you love my activities. And now Tiffany, the mean sister, who's now, like, just everything. But, like, Tiffany, the mean sister, what does she do? She's, like, you know, the head of a children's daycare on the Army base.
Oh, I love
it. And what does she do every day?
Activities.
And she used some of the same activities that I taught her when she was a kid. And then, like I said, my sister, my other sister has, like, five kids. Mm. So she's always doing activities with them, particularly, like, in the summer and things like that, because you don't trust her kids to be with nobody else. Yeah. So, like, she's, you know, always have her kids. And so they're always doing things. So that's what I wanted to be. And so when I went to, I got into FIT high school.
Oh, nice.
But then I left and went to California. So, you know, just went to rent. And so kept up, like, making clothes and drawing, things like that. And when I got to, you know, apply to college, I can only apply to one college because I didn't know about, like, help for college.
Like, fee waivers?
I didn't know about
that. Are you the first generation, first one in the family?
I'm not the first generation, first family, but my mother hadn't gone to college yet, right? Mm-hmm. My mom just finished her, like, she's getting ready to finish her doctorate now.
Oh,
congrats! But, so she didn't know, right? Yeah. And so we didn't know about those kinds of things. So I applied to my dream college, FIT. And they were like, and you and your little crude drawings, you can go about. And I was like, well, I guess I'll do my backup of politics. And then, like,
well, that worked out.
And, like, that's what happened. But in terms of doing, like, you know, social justice work or teaching people about civic education, you can obviously see where the teaching thing came from. But from the social justice perspective, I grew up in a family where almost everybody in my family is a preacher, a minister, or a famous gospel singer. And, like, on the charts, like, gospel singer. And, but our brand of faith is one of justice. Right? And, like, liberation theology, like, we, you know, like, that's our brand. And even though my family doesn't call it that, I now recognize that is, now that I know what liberation theology and stuff is.
Right.
Right. So, it's not as if my uncle and my uncles are, you know, our bishop, he, and, you know, my other cousins and aunts, it's not like they're not, you know, quoting, you know, particular, people that we now know. Mm. They're not quote, you know, but, That it was that same kind of brand of faith that you have this responsibility to care for others, that you have a responsibility, and our stories of Jesus, right? Because I'm a Christian faith, was him as a freedom fighter,
right?
That he was fighting against injustice for his people, and that is the messages we were taught from there. Mm-hmm. So that was always there.
Yeah.
So even when I would go to places, like I said, I left New York City, which, you know, leaving New York City, I grew up in Rosedale, Queens, and it was a pretty diverse, ethnically diverse community.
Yeah.
And then going to California and going to Silver Valley High with all white people. So you went from being the majority.
Silver Valley? Was it really Silver Valley?
It was Silver Valley High.
That's, like, in the Babysitter's Club, right?
The or name of my the high school I graduated
Sweet
from.
Sweet Valley High. Okay.
Which is that why now there are no degrees on the wall is because it's Silver Valley High. All right? So I went from majority of us, like, you know, across the street, my best friend was Jamaican, you know, my other, you know, friends were, Pakistani, next door was the Italian family. And according to my grandmother, Italians and Jews weren't white. Because remember, she's 93.
Right.
She's 93, and from her 93-year-old, you know, thing, whatever, they're not white. They're Italian and Jewish.
That's
like a whole different, like a whole different thing.
Yes. Whiteness is age appropriate.
And to us, white people lived in Manhattan.
Mm.
right? That they lived in Manhattan and Alabama, like meaning like down south, right? There was like, you know, so that was, and then so leaving, you know, that reality of people of color, of people who economically were like you in terms of middle class, right? Yeah. Because you had Italian and Jews and Pakistanis and Caribbean folks. Like, we were all in Rosedale because we were all middle, you know, all middle class kind of thing. To then go into Silver Valley High and experiencing poor white folks for the first time. Experiencing just being the minority, right? I had read about it, but I hadn't actually experienced it. Yeah. And so when things, when confronted with, I was like, there are no black teachers at the school. It was an observation because I came from a place where all of our teachers were black.
Yeah.
Right? So now I come to a place where all the teachers are white. Woo, this is a shock. Right? You know, so that was a shock. And so then I would ask the questions. I was like, why isn't there a black organization on campus then? Like, out in high school.
Right.
And so I started it.
Yeah.
And then I was in the cheerleading squad here in New York, you know, which incorporated not only traditional cheerleading, but like stepping, right? So when I went to try out for the team in Silver Valley, and they were like, yeah, that's way too much going on. Oh. And so when they rejected me, the only thing I knew to do was, oh, well, I'll just start my own. Right? So, like, I've always had that mindset, and that's the type of mindset our family raised us on, is, like, if you don't see yourself somewhere, create it.
Right.
And that's the reason for even creating this show. Yeah. I didn't see a space where people could learn what we used to teach each other in terms of civic education, in terms of that empowerment of knowing how government works, knowing that it doesn't always work in your favor, but knowing how to pull levers and raise your voice in order to make it work for you as much as you can.
Yeah.
Right? So I recognize that there wasn't a place for that. I recognize that, you know, there wasn't a place to teach you that there are more, there are institutions that exist in our community that we should be relying on, that you shouldn't just let government happen to you, that it is participatory.
You're preaching, girl.
Right? Government is participatory. Yes. So if you are not engaged in it, you are letting something happen to you.
Right. Yeah.
And I say let because you have not actively participated. There's a difference between people who are marginalized, who don't have the capacity, who don't have the resources, right? I'm not talking about them. I'm talking to people that you know, and you have the wherewithal and the ability to call an elected official, the wherewithal to, and the knowledge to go testify at a hearing about policy in your in your particular area, to say, like, I know this isn't right, right? To, you know, all of those kinds of things, that, and then not voting and not participating and things like that, then you are letting somebody else determine your future.
Right.
And there's never been a time in black folks being in this country where we have willingly let things happen to us.
Right.
Like, we have all the you know, and people, the new thing is resistance, right?
Like, we define resistance.
Right? I mean, the mere fact that people in this country have some of the rights, the responsibilities, and all that that they have is because marginalized people in this country push back and resist it.
Hashtag thank a black person.
Right?
Like, thank a black woman.
Yes.
Let's
reason why, the reason why our republic, because we're not a democracy, and that'll be a separate episode.
Right.
But the reason why our republic pushes towards democracy is because marginalized people in this country continue to push it forward towards that way.
That's true.
Right? And so that should give you right there. The history of people in this country is that they did not allow government and tyranny and all of this stuff to happen to them. They said, hell no.
Right?
I mean, even to the beginning folks, right, who were strictly thinking about themselves in terms of property owners, strategically thinking about themselves in terms of business owners, in terms of white men, you know, they're white,
That's
you know, and again, they weren't thinking of themselves as white males in that context then, right? Because white, even in that context, didn't have the same connotation as it does now.
And it wasn't a fully understood idea at that point.
No, it wasn't at all. And so, you know, don't let anybody, whiteness is new too, okay? So even then, though, they recognize that where we are right now, right? I'm not letting something happen to me.
Right.
I'm not letting somebody, you know, benefit off of my hard work.
Right.
I'm not letting somebody, you know, dictate when you all the way in another place.
Right.
you know, that's one of those whatever it is.
Underlying strains of the rugged individualism, sort of that mythology that we create around this idea of people being self-determining and going out, killing a whole lot of people, stealing their land and not, you know, actually farming their own farm. But, you know, put all that aside. Like, that idea that you're going to have to deal with me if you're going to try to get this type of policy passed. That's huge. It's important. And it's, you know, it's we got to have more of that.
And what I will say is that just because you're marginalized, just because what... Think about it this way. What's in your hand? If all that's in your hand is your vote, then use it. If that's all you have, at least you can say you didn't sit on the sideline and let something happen to you. Your person may not have won, but at least you had was in the game. If you wake up the next morning and you weren't even in the game and it's all bad, you got to take some accountability for the all bad, because everybody wants to do things in the big, broad stroke and get all the likes and get all the retweets and get all the fire and get the expose and the pictures and, you know, get their face beat and everything. But the reality is, what did you do with that one little thing to help that one person save their house? Because that one person that you helped them, they're going to turn around and help that next one. Because we're not at the big thing anymore. We've done that. And you know what? We ain't moving forward. And if net neutrality goes through, we won't be able to assemble large things. So again, you got to kind of think small and go, how can I make sure that if this, if I see myself as having a little bit of privilege in my Section 8 world, how am I going to make sure that that other person who may not have as much privilege as I see myself having, because homegirl needs to come do my laundry, if I need to go and say, person, let me help you see how this whole jig is run so we can see how we can benefit this for us on the government dime, because everybody else is getting fat. Yeah. So again, just because you marginalized, just because you feel like, oh, woe is me and it's all bad, there's always that sliver of light. Find it, grab hold of it, and then expand it.
And it's important to note that marginalized doesn't have to mean willing victim.
Oh, can you say that one more time? Just like,
marginalized does not have to mean willing victim.
Sila.
Right? Think and so, the what I mean by that is, collectively, yes, you may be marginalized. Individually, you may be marginalized given your circumstances. Yeah. Right? Yeah. But that doesn't mean you have to just lay down and let it happen.
You ain't got to take it.
You ain't have to take it. And it's my job and our job here at Sunday Civics to show you what other tools that you can have, that you have access to, in addition to your vote, so that you can resist, fight back, and at least have a say in helping to push us towards democracy and inclusion in this country. So, you've been listening to, you've been watching, Sunday Civics. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll try to do, you know, more of these videos just...
You want to know more about my life, you got to take me for drinks. I will not put that on video. Mm-mm, I'll tell you in private.
Doing...
Just saying.
Great.
Everything ain't for
you
everybody.
You can send me gummy bears, though, and I can tell you another,
another thing. There you go. She likes gummy bears. I like booze and privacy.
All right. Thank you guys for watching and listening. Make sure to follow us on social media, the Sunday Civics hashtag, the Sunday Civics Twitter account, our Facebook page. You can engage with us there. And then coming in the new year is a Sunday Civics group on Facebook. So, you know, you'll get some access to some things from there. So make sure to do that. Make sure to share the show and subscribe so we can help get our listeners up from there. Visit the website. Yes. Actually, if you're listening to the show, the only way that you can see our lovely chocolate in various shade brown faces is by going to the website at sundaycivics.org, and you can actually watch this entire video. Thank you guys for subscribing, for liking, for sharing, and engaging with us.
Hit the YouTube page
and engage with us there. I hope that you have a wonderful holiday season if you celebrate, and we'll be back with more Sunday Civics.
See you next week.
That was good, right?
Yeah.
That was good.
You told
Did you like it?